Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Rod Rundown. We are going to be covering episode 199 from March 3rd, 1997. I'm Kenny McIntosh. It is a little bit late, but fuck it. We had stuff to do, so it's a little bit late. So that's just the way it is. But it's here, and it's going to be worth the wait, because not since the Berlin Wall crushing down has anything come to Germany like the World Wrestling Federation and the creation of the European Championship. There is only one person I could talk to this about. There is only one lady who would roll her eyes accordingly to everything on this show. It is Sandra. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Kenny. I watched the show.
Are you ready to go back in time to Germany?
Sure. Sure I am. Germany, land of bleakness, land now, of dreariness, land of, hey, we had a wall and now we don't, but there's still part of it there. And Vince McMahon gives a speech. What the hell was this intro?
So I unfortunately, I couldn't find a transcript of it. So I had to pause and play and pause and play and write down the entire transcription of what Vince McMahon says. So this is the introduction, ladies and gentlemen, to Monday Night Raw. For the first time ever out of America, going to Germany. Here is what Vince McMahon said as we saw clips of the Berlin Wall being knocked down, fireworks that looked like a New Year's Eve, and then clips of WWF stars arriving at their hotel. Here's what he said. For nearly 30 years, this terrible wall symbolized the world's division, but the people of Berlin tore it down on November 9, 1989, signaling the end of the Cold War and the celebration of a unified Germany. The Brandenburg Gate, which once blockaded east from west, is now a free passageway. A portion of the wall that literally split the city in half still stands today, a testament to the human spirit and now a symbol of unity to the rest of the free world. Tonight, the eyes of the world are once again in Berlin. Eight superstars have battled for seven nights in seven cities for the honour of being the first European champion. Tonight, two men united as tag team champions are engulfed in controversy. Two men are united by family and divided by a common goal. Tonight, the world unites in Berlin, Germany to crown the first ever World Wrestling Federation European champion. And from that, we segue immediately into the standard Monday Night Raw intro. Sandra, dissect.
I mean, I don't expect to turn on Monday Night Raw and get a history lesson about the Cold War and unifying a country.
To be fair, though, if you were going to tell me that I had to be taught about the Cold War, there's no one I'd rather learn it from than Vince McMahon.
It's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, Vince McMahon narrating the history of the Cold War and the Berlin Wall coming down. It's just so bizarre. Like, this intro is literally about the Berlin Wall symbolizing bad things and division, and now something about the free world, as though Vince McMahon has brought freedom to Germany in 1997. I mean, what a topical reference, the Berlin Wall coming down. In 1997, this show aired.
But
not 1989, you might be confused. It's 1997.
Nothing as big had happened in Germany since that time.
Apparently there's nothing else to say about Germany. Like, I have a cousin who lives in Berlin. She could probably help you out.
Now, I'm curious, like, I wonder if there was, like, a Winter Olympics or something that happened in Germany in the early 90s, or something that maybe happened in between 89 and 97, because it would be completely like Vince to just not talk about that.
Well, you would think that probably something happened in Germany. I mean, I wouldn't really be able to tell you. I'm not that up on my German history myself. But if I were going to be writing an intro package to Monday Night Raw, I might just, like, be like, hey, so what happened in Germany over the past decade? Anything? Anything other than the Berlin Wall coming down?
I think the question you need to ask your cousin is between 1989 and 1997, what was the biggest thing that happened in Germany?
Or Berlin?
and report back.
Yeah. I mean, now, she was living here at the time, but, you know, I'm sure she could figure it out.
Now, you had trepidation going into this, right? You had trepidation going into this episode of Raw. Why the trepidation? Had you heard things? Had you been told things?
You told Why me it was a terrible show, and you said Thursday Raw Thursday was fun, so I figured if that was your threshold for fun and this was your threshold for terrible, I was in for something terrible.
To be fair, Thursday Raw Thursday was much less fun. Because the thing is, I never saw the full Thursday Raw Thursday when I was a kid. I saw all the kind of big clip bits, right?
Right.
I saw the Bret Hart Vader match, the Austin stuff, the losing the smile, the IC title change. So I didn't really sit through 2 hours of it. So that's my out on that one. The reason I told you that the Germany show would be terrible is because I figured that I couldn't remember this full show, so it's better to give you just no expectation level and tell you it's terrible.
Which actually I think helped a great deal, because I enjoyed this one more than I enjoyed last week's, I think.
Wow, that's cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess all the people you like were on this one.
Exactly. I got to see Psycho Sid versus Mankind. Owen versus Bulldog was great. The Honky
Rocky
Tonk
Maivia
Man
Vader
there,
was pretty good. Rocky Maivia Vader was pretty good. Like, I think it's probably Rocky's best match we've seen him in his run so far.
Yeah.
It was at least a fight. You know, it felt like a, but.
Severe lack of dancey punches, but we'll get to that.
We will. But and what's interesting is, you know, this episode is Raw episode 199, and next week is the complete rebranding of Raw into Raw is War.
Yeah, later on in the show, Vince is like, and just think about this, Raw is War. As though, you know, oh my gosh, everyone, like, just think about this amazing thing that I'm about to tell you. Like, there's going to be something crazy that happens. I thought he was going to announce a match, or he was going to announce a new story, or a feud, or something. But no, just Raw is War.
Very true. But it's interesting that Raw is War is the 200th episode of Raw.
Right.
Because back then, back in 1997, they didn't really, like... You know, now it's like whenever they've got an excuse to be like, this is the 850th episode. You know, any excuse they want to put that number up.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, they didn't really care. I mean, if you watch this show is exactly 20 days before WrestleMania.
Yes.
And I don't think WrestleMania is really that focused on this show.
I don't think so. I mean, there are a few WrestleMania ads, but certainly no more than any other pay-per-view.
Like, I mean, they almost pushed the fucking ECW invasion more than they pushed WrestleMania.
I wouldn't say almost. I would say they do.
They do.
Because we saw a good deal of last week's episode throughout this week's episode, which was kind of part of the dreariness, was, oh, we have to go back and watch that shit again.
To be fair, though, like, I thought it was better this week because ECW thrives in a clip format.
It is true. When you make it a highlight package, it is significantly more palatable.
It's very much so. I thought the intro was so jarring, though, because, I mean, I almost think that us doing Retro Raw was completely worth it for you to have to listen to Vince McMahon give you a speech in the Cold War.
It's true.
I think that's almost if at any point you go, why are we doing Retro Raw, Kenny? I'm just going to point you to this.
Yeah, like, because, Sandra, the Berlin Wall came down, and now the free world and WWF is here in Berlin.
And now you get to see a completely different side to Vince McMahon, which you'd never seen before this.
Yeah.
Now you get to see announcer Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon is definitely something else.
So it was so jarring to have this big kind of like speech and photos of the wall and like unity and blah, 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 blah. And then we just go right into the standard Raw intro.
And then the Honky Tonk Man's entrance.
Oh, for fuck's sake. And the thing is, we're people who care about fashion here in Inside the Ropes, right?
That's
in
true.
Terms of our wrestlers. Honky Tonk Man back in the day would wear his jumpsuit, but he would also have like a belt, which would be the same as the outfit. You know, it'd be like a big snazzy belt, which mm-hmm. would be... But for some reason, he's not wearing it now, and that makes his gut far more protruding.
Yeah, it's better to wear the belt because it hides the gut a little bit more. It can keep it in.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did mention last week that Jim Ross, his dad had passed away. So there's this weird thing, I don't know if you noticed this, Sandra, where he was on commentary, but he wasn't in Berlin. Because they cut to the commentators, and it's just Vince and Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, I think my friend Shane messaged me that the version that aired in the UK was different, and apparently it was just Vince and Honky Tonk Man on commentary, so I'm really fucking glad that we got this one on the network.
Yeah, because remember I was telling you, we got the European Championship special, and we got it the Wednesday previous to this?
Yeah.
Because we didn't get... The first full Raw that we got in the UK properly was next week's one, 200.
Okay. So when, like, Raw is War happened, that's when they started... Invading the UK as well.
Exactly. So, like, I think we did get the one the night after the Final Four. We did get that one, but that was the Friday night, because we used to get Raw on a Friday night. we got, I think we got part of the ECW Invasion one, but then this one, we got it the previous Wednesday night just as a special. So, it worked out weird, but we did just get Vince and Honky Tonk Man, but thankfully Jim Ross made an appearance on this one. And Honky Tonk Man got his own entrance for no reason that I can explain to any of you listening.
It was so long.
So we'll start off with Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes out. He is
also, can I just say all of the German that they try to pepper throughout this show is just infuriating.
Infuriating in the sense that you know what they're saying and it's bad?
No, I don't know what they're saying. It's just them trying to force in German references. Like Vincent Mann going, Guten Haben, honky tonk.
I thought it was great.
Well, I mean, it's...
That's if we ever had our own wrestling promotion, Sandra, and we were doing a show in Germany, I would absolutely say, Guten Tag, Sandra.
Of course you would. I'd be like, fuck off, Kenny.
Well, no, you wouldn't, because the sponsors wouldn't allow you to say that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Maybe we could be some sort of, I don't know, extreme wrestling promotion or something.
I feel that we would essentially be Vince and Sonny on Shotgun Saturday Night.
Yeah, basically. That would make a lot of sense, but I'm not fucking Elmo. That's a deal breaker.
Oh, God. So Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes out to the ring, and it's funny because as he's about to get in the ring, they cut to this girl, this like young girl in the front row who's like gagging over the idea of Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and I just wrote in my notes, I imagine that's Sandra.
Yes, that's fairly accurate. I actually noticed her as well and wrote, ha ha ha, that lady in a hat making vomit faces at Triple H. Because the crowd shots on this show are amazing. Like, say what you will about the crowd shots today being ridiculous. They're doing it in 1997 as well. And the German crowd shots are probably my favorite part about this show, because there are some great ones. If I knew how to make GIFs and it didn't take time and effort and I cared more, I would totally do that.
Yeah, you should. You should really be the giffer here at Inside the Ropes. That should be your thing. Give me just one second here.
Yeah, when they show, I don't know if they show the vomit girl or if they're just talking about some other girl, but at this point, Honky Tonk Man's like, that's my girl, my sweet Fräulein. And this is when I was like, if this goes on all night.
and it pretty much did. We just got random German references all night. So we got the first matchup was Bret Hart against Hunter Hearst Helmsley, which is a pretty big match to kick off Raw, to be fair. I think they did have a match before, like, WrestleMania 12. You know, it just seems like if Hunter came in like mid-95 and Bret was around till WrestleMania 12, they probably did have a match somewhere, but not one that I can remember. So it was fun to kind of see them, because you don't really get a chance to see them in the ring later on, because by the time he becomes Triple H, Bret's gone. And they had a pretty decent match, I thought. I thought they worked pretty well together.
Yeah, it was all right. Bret Hart has a little bit of a promo before it, which was kind of cool, because I think it was still during Triple H's entrance, and then, you know, they start to hit Bret Hart's music, and he's actually speaking backstage, like, before his entrance, which was kind of cool. And one of the things I noticed is Bret Hart's getting really good at these little promos. Like, they just ask him if he can stay focused, and Bret's like, yeah, he can, and, you know, Bret hopes that Stone Cold Steve Austin is at home watching the match. He's not at home. We'll get to that later. But, you know, he hopes that Stone Cold Steve Austin sees, you know, the exact thing Bret does to Hunter Hearst Helmsley, he's going to do to Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was nice. It was concise. And it reminds me kind of Daniel Bryan in a way, because Bret Hart is kind of known for not being able to speak and not being able to do promos. And when we first started doing Retro Raw, he had that, you know, big comeback promo, and I was very underwhelmed. Like, it was pretty bad, and I was not a fan. But now, all of the little cutaways that he does, all of the promo segments have been really excellent. So it reminds me kind of, you know, the evolution of Daniel Bryan on the microphone, always being known as not being a great character and not being able to speak and everything. But then once he had something to kind of latch onto, he got really good at it, and now he's, like, in a speaking role on television, right? And I'm seeing kind of the same thing watching Bret Hart's evolution as a promo guy, and I really like it. I'm actually getting a lot more into Bret Hart than I thought I would.
Well, and he's, you know, he's still pissed. He's still enraged about the fact that the title was taken from him, and he should be pissed because, like, so, you know, he he is the champion and Austin interferes twice in his match. Then the third time he hits him with a chair and Brett loses his title. And now Brett's not got a title shot.
Right.
Brett's just been put in a match with Austin at WrestleMania. And I mean, if I was Brett, I'd be pissed. Like, I get it. I completely understand his mindset. And what I like about Bret Hart when he cuts these promos is that he's not 100% perfect in his delivery, but because he's angry and you wouldn't be 100% in that set. You'd be so angry that you could barely get the words out.
Right. It's not end, polished, but it makes it feel more authentic.
Yeah, because at the end, I think he goes to say a line like, you know, and I'll beat up Stone Cold Steve Austin. But the way he does it, he kind of goes, I'll beat up Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's so angry he can't even say the name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adds to what he's doing. The German fans go nuts for Bret Hart.
Yeah,
absolutely
do.
Mental for him. Because he was like the biggest, like when they would go on European tours, he was the highest merch seller. People loved him the most.
There was that kid dressed entirely in Bret Hart gear that Bret gives his sunglasses to, and that was just adorable.
It was, and Vince mentioned that he has been voted the most popular athlete more than once in Bravo magazine in Germany. He was a huge deal in Germany. So it's as always. There's one point though where the Honky Tonk Man is trying to kind of like talk about, you know, Bret Hart. You know, Bret Hart does move so quickly, but he cheats and like he's so quick about it the referee doesn't see it and blah blah blah. And there's a bit where like Vince McMahon has to like talk the Honky Tonk Man down about something. I can't remember what it is, but I just have written down, with Honky Tonk Man, Vince McMahon is the voice of reason. Think about that.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's the Honky Tonk Man is accusing Bret Hart of doing an illegal headbutt at one point. And he's like, Bret Hart just moves too quickly for the ref to see, but I've got my eyes on Bret Hart. And I'm like, Honky Tonk Man, calm yourself. Whatever. Why are you here?
And Honky Tonk Man is just, he's still searching, Sandra, for the guy who can shake, rattle, and roll.
Apparently he is still searching for the guy who can shake, rattle, and roll. I don't know why he's out on commentary. Well, I guess, actually, this makes a lot more sense that he's out on commentary for an entire show if he's looking for someone rather than, you know, just watching certain matches, because it seems like all of the matches he chooses to watch looking for someone who can shake, rattle, and roll are not the opportune matches to be watching if you're looking for someone who can indeed shake, rattle, and also roll. I'm so tired of the Honky Tonk Man already, and I know there's no end in sight.
There is an end in sight. You've only got about a month and a bit left.
Okay.
Well, a month and a bit left until the glory of his find.
Of the reveal of who can shake, rattle, and roll, right?
Yeah, I thought this was a decent match. The finish was a bit weird. Like, Brett's got Hunter upside down. He's kicking him, and Errol Hebner, the referee, is trying to stop it, and Brett just shoves him out of the way to cause the DQ. Which causes China to run in out of nowhere, and China's like looking for a fight with Bret Hart, and Bret kind of is angry, but he's kind of taking the higher ground. Like he's not gonna fight a woman, and that's where we are in society at that point. That like, you know, you wouldn't really have a guy just punch a woman out of nowhere. So he's like, and you know, Vince McMahon makes points in, you know, Bret Hart's a gentleman, he's not gonna hit a woman, and meanwhile, like she looks like she could batter all five of the officials that come out to try and hold her back.
She really, really does. It's funny because throughout this show, whenever China shows up or whenever there's reference to her, they keep not knowing what to call her exactly. Like JR says at one point during this match, he's glad Marlena's feeling better back in the States after that Amazon woman, blah, 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 like that Amazon ragdolled her or whatever. And then Vince has now taken to calling her that bionic type woman. Like, I'm not sure she looks like she's made of metal.
She's they do. I think the way they talk about her is really interesting, because like there's never really been a female performer in mainstream American wrestling up to this point who's like China.
Mm-hmm.
Who looks like I remember being terrified of her. Like,
she looks terrifying.
Like, I remember trying to explain to my mom, I remember saying to my mom at one point, what is that? Like, because I didn't know. Like, imagine being in Scotland, if you're in, like, Glasgow. Like, I've never seen a bodybuilder woman. Like,
right?
Well, I mean, I've never seen a woman who looks like that, who has pecs and, you know, like, a jaw like that. Like, I'd never seen it. So it was very, it was very, very, what's the word? It was just bizarre. Yeah, jarring. I just didn't know what it was. And my mum's trying to be like, well, she's a very muscly lady, Kenneth. And I was like, is she? Like, okay. And but then you kind of just, you know, over time, you just get it. But I think China was just, she came along at the exact right time in society as well. People just didn't know what to make of her at all.
Yeah, I mean, she's great, and I really like her whole deal. I keep forgetting that China and Hunter Hearst Helmsley are not officially together as a unit at this point. Like, there's speculation, because China keeps interfering on behalf of Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and her coming out here is even more telling than, you know, her going after Marlena constantly, because why would China be getting involved with Brett the Hitman Hart if she isn't in some sort of alliance with Hunter Hearst Helmsley? Like, that doesn't really make sense. Why would she target him? But we don't officially know that China is with Triple H yet.
No. We don't even know that she's called China yet.
No, no. She's just that woman. It's always, we're there's just that woman.
Like, it's like, I mean, you know, we can call people by their gimmick names at the time, but, like, we know she's China. We can't just say, that woman turned up. Like, we know it's China. So
it'd be kind of dumb of us to be like, that woman, because I just feel like it would be more confusing. It's China. Exactly. We know that it's China.
So then they go to the studio, because Steve Austin is in a studio in the States. Again, we mentioned last week about how he was injured, so they had to kind of pull him from the tour. So we go to the studio as if Steve Austin is there, but he's not there. And then we hear the worst toilet flush noise I've ever heard in a wrestling show.
It was really bad. Because, of course, hilarity. We did see Steve Austin arrive at the studio earlier. I think it was during the Bret Hart, Hunter Hearst Helmsley match. And Austin just goes to the camera, get the hell out of here. Because he's pissed off at everything and the world. And I love that about Steve Austin. But yes, we just see an empty chair. And then they're like, oh, but apparently there's audio. He has a mic on him or something. Because you hear this awful approximation of a toilet flush. Because that is hilarious that Steve Austin was in the bathroom.
But then we
I'm amazed
see,
we didn't hear him shitting or something too, because Vince McMahon.
That was probably in the script, and Austin was like, "No, not this." there's this great bit where, like, they're showing, like, shots of Berlin, and I mean, you know, I love like so the venue in Berlin is Deutschland Hall. Like, I love that. There's like, I love. I mean, me being the guy who always talks about arena names,
mm-hmm.
like, I love a foreign arena name. It's great. I love that stuff.
The Deutschland Halle.
Yeah, like, that's great. That shit's great. And then, like, which, by the way, we, at the moment, the announcer for this show, Carsten Schaefer, the German WWF announcer, I'm currently speaking to him via email, maybe coming on Inside the Ropes as a guest.
Oh, that'd be
so
cool.
So hopefully we can get him soon. Talk about some European tour stories and stuff like that. So that'd be good.
Those are always my favorite interviews. Like,
yeah, it's always
the
ones
super known.
Yeah, they have the best stories, without question. So, we'll see how that one turns out. But so they're showing all these different shots of Berlin, and then Vince says, I don't know why I found this funny. I felt like Vince was just trying to figure out what he was going to say, and he just came up with this. He was like, it was showing you, like, something at night, and it was like I think it was the Brandenburg Gate. And Vince just goes, there's some of the nighttime scenes in Berlin. What?
Some the of night the nighttime scenes?
Like, what are you talking about? Oh, you're so Vince McMahon. It's not even funny.
He is just the most Vince McMahon he can possibly be on this show.
but they do, what's quite cool is they show clips throughout the night of what leads us up to Owen and Bulldog in the finals of the European Championships. We see Owen eliminating Bulldog from the Rumble. They're kind of setting the scene for that, so that's quite cool. But that leads us into match number
two. Yeah, it's a good thing there was so much dissension and we had so many moments, because they could replay all of them here.
Yeah, it was almost like it was planned.
Right.
So it's Rocky Maivia defending his Intercontinental Championship against Vader. Paul Bearer's facial expressions during the entrance made my life happier.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's so good.
Well, Paul Bearer should just always make your life happier, because just by virtue of him having existed on this earth, I think we're all better for it.
The thing is, in about a month and a half's time, Paul Bearer's look changes and he becomes the most annoying on-screen personality for like 5 months.
Oh, really?
So... But he's meant to be. He's a heel. You know, it's not like he's Roman Reigns. But, like, I just remember, it'll be interesting watching it back, because I remember as a kid hating him in the sort of summer of 97. But, I don't want to explain why. I think you actually probably like it, but anyway, it'll come. But Vader's coming down. He's fucking, you know, flexing his muscles, looking like a badass. Rocky Maivia comes out. Rocky's trash talking Vader before the match. That was quite interesting.
Yeah.
As a babyface.
It's weird because I remembered, and they showed a preview of Rocky Maivia versus Vader, or, you know, like a graphic or something beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so as Vader was coming out, and granted, I watched this and I was really tired because it was like 3 a.m, but Vader's coming out and I'm like, who's he fighting? I'm like, this is for the Intercontinental Championship, but who's he fighting? Who's the champion? And it took me a little while to remember that Rocky Maivia was indeed the Intercontinental Champion, which is probably not a very good sign.
It's not. He was just quite a generic character, you know? But I think this was probably the best match that he'd been in so far because there was a reason to be sympathetic to him.
Yeah.
You had this big, big fat bastard beating him up, you know? And he was holding his own, you know? And I think like some of his moveset was better. Like his high cross body looked better on Vader. For whatever reason, when Vader's mask came off, it made the match look better, even though Vader just looked like a big fat ginger egg.
I noticed, like, Vader's mask has come off in the past few matches that we've seen with him, right? Like, I mean, it came off when his eye was all bleeding and everything, which made sense because the mask cannot be all that comfortable to wear when you have blood all on your face and it's all sticky, and that had to just feel nasty. I understand why he took his mask off. Why did his mask come off in this match? Like, was it just that DDT was so messy that his mask couldn't take it anymore?
I think so. I don't really know why it came off. I mean, it's annoying because now he just takes his mask off all the time because he doesn't want to wear it anymore.
Right.
I've heard, though, that they stink. Like, those masks are, like, the worst thing.
Well, they have to be. I mean, if they're made of leather.
That's why if I was ever a wrestler, I wouldn't have a leather mask. Just for that one reason. Apart from that, I'd 100% have a leather mask. Of course.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to. I mean, when you get leather wet, it smells really bad. And when you get leather wet and sweaty and bloody and et cetera, it can't be good.
So in the end, Vader is on the outside kind of battering Rocky Maivia when Mankind just shows up to help his tag team partner and hits Rocky Maivia with the urn for the DQ.
Yes, he helps his tag team partner by getting him a disqualification win, meaning that he costs his tag team partner the title.
Mm-hmm.
Not all that helpful, Mankind.
No. In fact, very unhelpful, Mankind.
Very unhelpful. Because it's not like Rocky was really even about to win. Like, they were just on the outside brawling.
Mm-hmm.
So it really didn't make any sense at all. It wasn't like, you know, oh, Rocky was about to get the win and Mankind didn't want Vader to get a pinfall loss or something like that. It was just like Mankind got bored backstage and wanted to hit someone with an urn or something. I don't know. One of my favorite lines in here, Vince McMahon actually says during this match, "Into that, what a maneuver by Rocky!" Like, what a maneuver is actually just a term for him now.
Oh, that is, because you think when people make fun of him for it, they're exaggerating. They're not.
No,
they're not exaggerating.
Not like, at all.
That's just him. And I love him for it. I love him to death for it, because he's just so... He's so good.
JR adds, yeah, turns that thing into a power slam. Like, no one knows what a maneuver by Rocky was. It was just a what a maneuver.
I miss the times when JR used to say, you're going to call a move, McMahon?
I know, right?
But you must have been over the moon because it was the Sultan turning up here.
I was so excited. I mean, we got some Lawler ECW shenanigans first.
They filled us in and everything.
I wanted to make mention of it because they weirdly blur out certain things in this clip. And I don't know if that's just for, it can't just be for the network because they wouldn't blur out stuff in that way. Like the blurring was really pixely.
The idea that they had was they wanted to make it feel like some of it was unplanned. So like they were pixelated stuff to go like, oh, we can't even show you what they did last week.
So they can't show a kendo stick shot, but they can show a chair shot to the head.
I mean, I didn't book it. You know, I'm just explaining to you what the idea behind it was.
I'm just saying it's really weird.
Looking back, the most intense part of the whole ECW invasion, for me anyway, and the part that worked, was Vince McMahon physically trying to hold Paul Heyman back and Lawler trying to get to him. That to me was just like, really intense.
Yeah, that part was intense and interesting. I just thought the blurring was very strange here.
It was strange. I mean, I think the idea was just to put over the ECW invasion as this kind of out of this world, kind of like grungy, violent thing that like is so violent that we can't even show you a proper replay of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of build ECW, which, you know, it's fine if you didn't have WrestleMania in 2 fucking weeks.
Right.
Anyway, the Sultan's back.
I was so happy to see the Sultan.
He's back. I don't want to say why yet because I don't want to give away anything, but he is back because he is now going to be on WrestleMania, so they want to bring him back on Raw and kind of, you know, reinsert him. He's wearing Big Papa Pump's headdress, of course, but
he
has his mask on.
I was a little disappointed at the lack of Bob Backlund and the Iron Sheik, but I mean, I guess they really couldn't foot the bill for them to come to Germany. Also, did not foot the bill for the Funkettes to come to Germany, so Flash Funk makes his entrance solo, meaning Flash Funk had to dance on his own, which is not a very good idea.
This was like Poundland Sultan Flash Funk, or Dollarama Sultan Flash Funk, whatever
Dollarama?
Part of the world.
Dollarama?
Oh, that was a Canadian one. What's your one?
Dollar Tree or just the dollar store?
Oh, yeah. Dollarama's weird, but Dollar Tree, that's normal.
What's well, no, I'm just saying that we don't have Dollarama. I'm not saying it's weird. I'm just saying we don't have it.
Let me check this as a thing. Have I just made up Dollarama? I surely to God. I can't.
You know,
have
in my
up.
Actual day-to-day conversation, I've taken to calling something Poundland, whatever.
Yes.
And nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank fuck. Dollarama is the leading dollar store operator in Canada. Thank fuck that I did have a frame of reference for that, and I wasn't being a nut job. Whew! Feel better about myself now. Okay, so, I made the joke for Canada, I made the joke for America, I made the joke for UK, we can move on. Wasn't funny in any of them, so anyway, so they didn't bring any of those people over that you mentioned that they should have brought over, but Sultan kills Flash Funk. But you want to know my favourite part of this whole thing?
What?
Vince McMahon has one of the greatest lines on commentary, because you know that way, like, you see the Sultan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you look at him. I'm talking to everybody, the thousands of you that download this podcast every single week to go back in time with us. You watch the Sultan, you could sometimes be, it would be understandable that you would mistake him for the Sultan of Brunei.
Of course.
Which is why Vince McMahon at the end of this match has to say, I mean, he's not the Sultan of Brunei. Thanks for clearing up that Fatu is not the Sultan of Brunei.
I mean,
crazy.
I get them confused all the time.
It's a daily problem for me.
Yes.
But what a fucking line. Like, not to be confused with the Sultan of Brunei. Okay.
Okay, Vince McMahon. Okay. Okay. So, Vince just cracks me up. You know, it's weird because the Sultan's, like, flesh-colored tank top thing that he has, I didn't notice that he was wearing one until near the end of the match. And then I was like, wait, he's wearing a shirt. And then for some reason, that just threw me off.
And you can't be thrown off with the Sultan. You know, we can't be having that.
I know, it was just very strange. I also liked
See when he does that? See where Sultan does that thing where, like, Like, Flash Funk's trying the flying head scissors, and then the Sultan's supposed to, like, drop him in his face.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't, like, I get the feeling that he was supposed to lift him slightly so the impact looked good. But he just dropped him.
Yeah, yep. There's no real finesse with the Sultan.
No, there's not. And you don't mean the Sultan of Brunei.
I don't mean the Sultan of Brunei. I mean the actual Sultan who is wrestling on WWE.
You mean the Sultan of the World Wrestling Federation.
The Sultan of the World Wrestling Federation. There is no finesse with him. The Sultan of Brunei, finesse all the way, man.
Do you know what I'm going to get you, actually? I'm going to hunt it down. There is a Sultan and Bob Backlund action figure 2-pack. I'm going to find that for you.
I want that so badly.
Anyway, sorry, you were going to talk about the end of the match.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, not the end of the match. I'm just going to say there's a Raw is War ad during this match, and there are actual bombs and tanks.
Yep.
Because...
WWF.
WWF. Like, we're just all full of strange references on this show. You know, we see the Berlin Wall coming down. Now we have Raw is War next week with bombs and tanks. I'm not really sure what the World Wrestling Federation is trying to be at this point. I mean, is it just becoming a militant operation?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I mean, the only other thing to say about the match is that Lawler was on the phone at one point, and then Paulie Dangerously was also on the phone later on, and Paul Heyman just sounds annoyed.
Let's get him out of the way now. So Lawler phones in. You're obviously talking about what happened last week and next week. And then later on, Paulie phones in. And what do you make of the whole dynamic, like, of those two? Because I know that you really like Paul Heyman, but you really dislike Jerry Lawler. Like, true. But do you enjoy the dynamic of what they're trying to set up?
I just don't really know where it's leading. I think that's the confusing part for me, is, like, to what end is this happening? And, I mean, it's involving a commentator and a promoter of another company. So, it's strange, but sort of entertaining. I think Paul Heyman has a point about being annoyed, because he's just like, you know, whatever, like, you guys invited me here, and so then I came, and I brought people, and I helped you out. And then now I'm getting all this abuse from Jerry Lawler for some reason. And I mean, Jerry Lawler's anger and Jerry Lawler's very good at this, I will say. Like, he's very good at sounding very annoyed with ECW. And I don't remember everything that he said on the phone. He's annoyed with Heyman and ECW, and you know, he's annoyed that the ECW bums darkened Raw, and he calls them, you know, those weren't highlights, they were lowlights, and something, something. And he challenges ECW to show up again next week in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he's like, if you show up again next week, Raw will be war. Well, it will be, because they're advertising Raw as war. So I think that's pretty much a given. I mean, the dynamic is interesting. I just don't know what it can lead to. And maybe that's just me not knowing how promotions can work together, because that's not something we see nowadays, right? Like, we don't see Lucha Underground coming onto WWE. We don't see Chikara coming onto WWE, because it just, that doesn't happen. There are too many contractual obligations and whatnot and all the legal stuff. So it's intriguing, but it's, I would rather be watching a wrestling feud, I think.
Yep. I get it. Well, so basically, we're gonna, next week, ECW are back. We'll see what happens.
Great.
After this, we get a interview with Ahmed Johnson. We get final four clips, sorry, from, we get final four clips from, the tag partner exploding at that show when Bulldog got the win, but Owen kind of almost fucked it for them. We know the Sid interview was next. Sorry, I apologize. The Sid interview is next.
And they showed footage backstage of Stone Cold from October as well in the WWF studio to remind us what happened last time Stone Cold Steve Austin was in the WWF studio. And I love him just insisting to the cops that he's a big star. And it's just funny because they're like, hey, remember how poorly this went back in October when we had him in the studio? Let's do that again.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I did mean to say, if you have the network, which I assume you do because you follow along with this podcast with us, somebody had recommended this to me. I'd never seen it. If you go on the Hidden Gems collection, there is a match from September 1996 in South Africa with Steve Austin and Bret Hart. And it's before they've built the feud on TV. And it's Bret's first match since WrestleMania 12 because he'd agreed to do it before WrestleMania. And it's worth watching. It's worth seeing Owen Hart's on commentary, and he's trying to make out like him and Bret are buddies again. It's really good.
So that whole Hidden Gems collection is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, you get like Undertaker and like Kane and Smoky Mountain when Kane was like the Unabomb or whatever it was. Like, there's some good stuff on there, especially if you want to see like Hidden Gems, hence the name. Right. Sid's interview. Take it away, Sandra.
Listen to me, Mankind. I can hear that you brushed up on your German language. But what you should have done, you should have gotten ready for the game. Cause the game we play is simple. Two men enter and one man survives. And this game we play, I am the master. And you have to find out the hard way, because tonight you will become another symbol of one of my many victories to WrestleMania. And you, okay. Undertaker, to the dark side I go, and you will become another symbol at the wayside of my victories, because I am the man, and I am the master, and I am the ruler of the world. Ha ha ha.
I mean, he doesn't need finesse. He's just glorious in all forms.
I just love him. You will become another symbol of one of my many victories to WrestleMania.
Doesn't make any sense.
You will become a None symbol at the wayside of my victories.
Oh, God. He's so great, though. He's so great. I mean, he cancels UK tours, but he's great.
cannot tame Psycho Sid. You just can't.
No, you can't. And it was also like, I would have brought Sid over a couple of years ago if I could have, but like, it's just not worth the risk, which is why I just enjoy him in his glory in the past.
Yes.
Or
I just hope he shows up to WrestleCon.
He tends to show up to the big US appearances. He was actually at the big event in New York earlier this weekend. So.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah. Looks like a bag of shite, but he was there. I can't wait. I almost want to hug him. I know he wouldn't let me because he's from Arkansas, but like, I would love to hug him.
He's from Arkansas, so he won't let you? Like, that's the deciding factor?
Well, no. It's because he's the master and the ruler of the world, so those kind of people don't want hugs.
Probably not. I wonder if he'd let me hug him.
Can you imagine the aggression with which Psycho Sid makes love?
I don't know if I want to imagine that. It's kind of terrifying.
But can you imagine?
I don't know if I can. I mean, it would just be so intense. Who would be scarier, Psycho Sid or Brock Lesnar?
Psycho Sid, 100%.
Okay, agree.
Brock Lesnar's an act. Like, Brock Lesnar, I bet he's just a tame, quiet guy.
Well, I mean, he does live in the middle of nowhere in Canada.
Like, I told you the Harvey Whippleman story about Sid, didn't I?
I don't remember.
So, Harvey Whippleman, in his book, because he used to manage Sid in 92 when Sid was Sid Justice, and they were staying at a hotel one night, and Harvey Whippleman remembers getting up in the middle of the night, or waking up, and Sid was not in his bed, but he was sitting beside his... you know, like in a hotel, you get the table with the chairs?
Mm-hmm.
He was sitting at that, and he was stroking his face with a gun.
Wow.
So...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's insane. I mean, the term Psycho Sid just seems to absolutely fit. Like we say, he seems authentic. He seems authentically mental.
He's so great. Up next, we go from one mentalist to another. Ahmed Johnson comes out with one of my top five tunes of 1997. he is dressed for action.
Yes.
Dressed for action. He comes out and Carsten Schaefer is given the duty of interviewing Ahmed Johnson because, you know, Vince couldn't be bothered getting up into the ring. And he asks Ahmed in German about Farouk and then says in English, you know, Farouk's challenged you, Chicago Street Fight, WrestleMania, do you accept? And Ahmed Johnson just says yes. So what I wrote down as I was watching it was, sadly, Ahmed doesn't give much of a nonsensical promo. Oh, no, wait, there it is. One word to say to Farouk, you're going down.
And Vince McMahon responds to that.
Go, yeah, it's so good.
In any language, it's the same. Declares.
Of course it is.
You're going down is not the same in any language. Those would be English words.
And there's one point where Ahmed Johnson starts to talk and you can't make out any of it.
Yeah,
nothing.
Not at all. It's too quiet.
Because he's a quiet
and
speaker.
And also it's Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah, and the audio is bad and like...
I was just... Why did they do this segment in ring? It doesn't make any sense to do an interview segment like this in ring because you have Carsten Schaefer having to translate to the audience what Ahmed Johnson is saying. Now, we can barely translate to our audience what Ahmed Johnson is saying and we're speaking English. So, I mean, Carsten Schaefer's given kind of a very difficult job here because not only does he have to understand Ahmed Johnson, he then has to translate this somehow to the German audience. And it doesn't play very well because you just have, you know, Ahmed mumbling and then you have Carsten Schaefer speaking in German. So for the television audience, it's not great. For the live audience, they have to wait for a translation of Ahmed Johnson. You can't get the full glory of Ahmed Johnson without it being Ahmed Johnson speaking. I'm sure that it lacks something in translation. So it just seems really strange to me that they would do this in ring in front of the live audience when they could have just done a pre-tape backstage.
You would think, but they decided to go live. Now, what I'm going to tell you at the end of this episode is, going into this, Sondra was dreading the episode, right?
I was. And this is can we talk about how Ahmed says that he's not coming by himself this time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, but I won't come by myself, not this time.
So the idea is, that initially the plan was to do Ahmed Johnson versus Farouk in a singles match at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
But then they wanted to do a multi-man thing so they could get... Now, do you know who he teams with at WrestleMania 13? Do you know this already?
I'm going to assume the Legion of Doom, but I don't know.
Yes, it is the Legion. That's who it ends up being.
Well, because, I mean, we see the Legion of Doom basically telling us that after.
Yeah, so, like, but basically the idea was when they signed Legion of Doom, they were like, oh, great, we can do a six-man. And it kind of works out better because it's more fun, you know, like a big six-man with, like, and then you get Savio and Crush in the show and whatever. It works. So Ahmed's kind of, yeah, he's not going to come alone, but he doesn't really sell what we're going to get very well. Oh, I'm not coming alone. Well, neither's Farouk because he comes with a squad of guys. Like, right. What's your point? But now, Sondra was dreading this show, and this is thought of as one of the bad Raws, but I'm going to tell you at the end of the show something happened on Nitro, which is going to make you so fucking glad that we're reviewing Raw and not Nitro.
I'm not reviewing Nitro, just for the record. Just putting that out there right now before people start being like, oh, you should do Retro Nitro too. No. Nope.
Listen, if Patreon gets up to a point where you're full-time employed, you review whatever's handed to you from the listeners here of our lovely show.
I mean, if people want to pay us loads and loads of money, then sure.
Maybe.
Why not? But then maybe. Exactly.
But we get the World Wrestling Federation Championship on the line here. They do, after you're right, after... Ahmed Johnson, they do give us the brief LOD promo from Shotgun where, you know, they're as mental as Ahmed said, where, like, Hawk's talking about, like, a cat licking his foot or something, or a rat licking
Oh, no. He says... Yeah.
You've written this down, haven't you?
Of course I have. You know how it is when you wake up in that dark alley in Chicago on your cardboard mattress. I mean, we've all been there, right? Mm-hmm. Waking up in a dark alley in Chicago on our cardboard mattresses.
Standard Saturday.
Right. And then, I don't have the whole thing written down, but also he's like, you wake up because a sewer rat is biting on your big toe, and that is what the LOD is all about. Apparently, I have not fully understood the concept of the Legion of Doom until right now, because now I understand, Kenny, that the Legion of Doom is all about waking up in a dark alley in Chicago because a sewer rat is biting on your big toe. I mean, it's so clear.
I mean... I thought that was just, you know, that was clarified anyway, just in their sort of their being there. I don't think that need to be explained, but at least they've verbalized.
They've explained it. Yeah, and they talk about their psychological profiles being checked and how it wasn't good. And then, you know, we like the way we are. It's everybody else that has to wrestle us that doesn't like the way we are. Oh, what a rush, apparently.
We go into the WWF title match, Sid versus Mankind. Mankind cuts a promo completely in German on Sid first. I have no idea what he says.
I only caught, Ich bin Mankind.
Mankind comes out looking like a, you know, an abused pet, as he always does.
That's kind of his aesthetic.
And then Sid comes out. Sid wastes no time, just starts beating on Mankind before he even takes his vest off. I thought they had a better match than it really had the right to be.
I really, like, enjoyed this match.
I think it's like you don't ever think of them having a match, and like Sid is awful in ring, and Mankind kind of realizes that and works around him, which is part of the reason it works so well. And of course, there is the amazing Paul Bearer bump.
Oh, yes. When he gets knocked off the apron, because Sid goes to chokeslam Paul Bearer, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to get a chokeslam to Paul Bearer by Psycho Sid. Like, this cast of characters is just bizarre, right? And so you have Psycho Sid almost chokeslamming Paul Bearer, but then Mankind goes to try to break it up, but Sid moves, so Mankind runs into Paul Bearer and he knocks him off the apron. Paul Bearer just falls like a sack of shit on the ground. It is a delight.
Amazing.
I have no reason to like this match. I've never been that into Mankind as a wrestler. And I don't know what it is. Like, there's just something about Mankind matches that don't really do that much for me. And maybe as we go through Retro Raw, that'll change. But it hasn't changed yet. And Psycho Sid is terrible at wrestling. Like, everything he does is so bad. But this match was really fun.
And he Sid delivered an excellent powerbomb to Mankind.
That's true. Mankind just sort of dies. He just flops over.
Because sometimes Sid does a powerbomb that's quite kind of soft and pansy, like it doesn't really look like it hurts. But like this one was really good.
It was really good.
And Sid retains. Mm-hmm. So, yay!
I was very happy, of course. I mean, not that there was any doubt, but
No.
No. I mean, it was a really fun match. You got to see Sid powering out of the mandible claw and, you know.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then we get more clips from obviously the lead to the main event. We get clips from Shotgun Saturday Night 9 days ago where the Bulldog loses to Crush because Savio Vega holds the leg. And of course, Owen Hart doesn't help. And then Clarence Mason goes to leave and Bulldog brings him back and fires him. And the crowd are going nuts and Owen's like trying to stop it and Bulldog fires Clarence Mason. Were you glad you got to see the clip of this to kind of see the finish of that playing out?
I was glad that I got to see the clip of it because I think that Clarence Mason is far too underutilized in the WWF. And any time I can see Clarence Mason react to things with funny facial expressions, I am happy.
Then we cut to Vince McMahon interviewing Steve Austin in the studio. I mean, Vince is in Berlin, but Steve Austin's in the studio. Mm-hmm. And
which again Austin begs the question, why did they need to fly Steve Austin out here? Why didn't they go to his home in Victoria, Texas again? I mean, Steve Austin doesn't ask that question, but I'm asking that question because what was the point of flying him out to Stamford, Connecticut when they're all in Berlin?
I agree. I agree. They should have. But Austin here, like, in recent weeks, I've forgotten how much of a great promo Steve Austin was on Retro Raw because he's been very physical. He's not really cut promos the last few weeks, like since the night after the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
But this was so great. Like, so great. He talks about how he got screwed for 7 years and Bret Hart's been screwed for, like, you know, a couple of months. He brings up an amazing point about how Shawn Michaels loses his smile and injures his knees and he gets video packaged and all that. And he was like, you know, he had a blown up knee and he worked 25 minutes with three of the best in the world.
I have to agree Shawn with Steve Michaels. Austin. Why, when Shawn Michaels blows out his knee, why do you make a video about that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do
that? Because you want to fuck him, Vince McMahon, that's why.
Pretty much.
And this whole promo, which lasts about 90 seconds, Steve Austin sets up feuds with Shawn Michaels, Ken Shamrock, and Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm. He's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. I mean, he talks about his blown out knee and he's like, this submission match is a bunch of bull, you know, and he talks about Ken Shamrock saying that Bret Hart's the better technician and Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, doesn't have any quit in him. He's like, you got that right, son. Stone Cold ain't got no quit in him. And he's like, ain't nobody in wrestling that can make Stone Cold quit. And, you know, that's the intrigue, I guess, of going into a submission match between Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. How will it end? Because Steve Austin doesn't really have a submission. I mean, I guess he has the Million Dollar Dream, but not really. Like, he's not using that extensively right now. And Bret Hart is known for the sharpshooter, but Steve Austin's not going to tap out. Of course he's not. And Vince asked him at the end, you know, why are you so bitter? And he's like, you treat me like a dog and you expect me to smile. You remind me of a jackass. And that's how they finish it.
Amazing. Amazing.
So good.
And is because they're not really giving a lot of time to the Bret Hart Steve Austin match on TV, but the small bit of time that they do have, they're really selling the intensity of it.
They're maximizing really their intensity. Minutes, as JR would say.
Indeed, indeed. And you'll hear more from Jim Ross WrestleMania week, which Sondra has had the access to, so she'll no doubt be dropping some opinions on what she thought about it before you get to hear it, but you will get to hear the full, if you're on Patreon, you get to hear the full 60 minutes on Patreon. And if you're not a subscriber, we'll be putting highlights of that up during 7 Days, 7 Podcasts. It's main event time. They tell us before that Bulldog got to the final by beating Mankind and Vader. Owen got there by beating Flash Funk and Bret Hart. They show us the tournament brackets and all that sort of stuff.
I'm kind of bummed we didn't get to see Owen versus Bret.
I know, right?
I mean, not bummed enough that I'm going to seek it out, but... You know.
Well, you can't.
Wouldn't it have been on that European special thing that aired in the UK?
No, no, we just got the tour thing. We just got this.
Oh.
It was the exact same show. Except Vince McMahon Honky Tonk Man on commentary. Yay. I'm presuming you've heard a lot about this match before with Bulldog and Owen. It's one of the matches that a lot of wrestling fans talk about. What did you think about it coming out of it after all the hype that you'd probably heard about it going in?
Weirdly, I don't remember a lot of the hype of this match. Like, I mean, I know that I've heard of it and I knew who won because I know that Bulldog is the European champion until he's not anymore. Because of my favorite person on the show, meaning not my favorite person on the show. But, yeah, so I mean, I didn't really know a lot of what happened in the match. I didn't know if, you know, Owen was going to like fully turn on Bulldog or if it was going to still be they are tag team champions together, but they're fighting kind of like you know, and it was like they still remained a team with all of the dissension that we've seen, right? Like we've spent this entire episode building up this match and showing all of the dissension that we've seen for months and months and months with, you know, Owen hitting Bulldog or Bulldog hitting Owen and Clarence Mason being involved, and Clarence Mason's fired now, which is interesting. Like that's a really interesting development for me and makes me kind of sad, to be honest, because I love Clarence Mason. But I was expecting this match to be good and it was excellent because there's so much good wrestling in it. And that's something we don't get to see on Raw very often, on Retro Raw anyway, right? Because a lot of times the story is the more important thing, or Psycho Sid is in the match, which I love, don't get me wrong, but the wrestling is not usually top quality. This was top quality wrestling and it was excellent. And I loved all of the little details that they put in. Like at one point, Bulldog throws Owen outside, and then he holds the ropes open for Owen to get back in the ring. And so you'd think, like, is he, you know, Bulldog's very clearly the face here. The crowd's really behind Bulldog and everything. So yeah, he's going to do the gentlemanly thing and, you know, help Owen get back into the ring and all of that. Later on in the match, Bulldog gets thrown to the outside and Owen holds the ropes open for Bulldog. And there's that drama, right? Like, is Bulldog going to get attacked by Owen Hart as he gets through the ropes? And he really isn't. So there was a lot of playing on your expectations of Owen Hart turning on Bulldog in the match, and it doesn't happen. But there's always that intrigue of whether or not it might, and I think they play that line really well.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people, you know, it's like when Bulldog wins the match, and the thing with Bulldog, people, I don't think people really understand sometimes, is for the size that he was, how big he was really agile and able to do things that, like when he has Owen on his shoulders and he's managed to flip the reversal of the cradle, like he does it really well. Like there's no, today sometimes that might not work as well, but like for a guy that size, he does really well with that kind of stuff. But when he wins, he gets given the belt and you just hear JR saying, don't turn your back on him, don't turn your back on him. So it's like they're still teasing even after the match that Owen's going to turn on him.
And they film it really well too, with Owen actually like kind of going up behind him and then doing their weird, like they raise each other's hands in kind of a weird like way, like.
Well, cause then, and then Owen, cause Owen initially is in a huff, and then he puts his arm up and then he tries to grab the European belt to hold it up together. And Bulldog is kind of like yanking the belt back as if to say, you know, this is this, and he swaps hands so the tag belt is on Owen's side. There's a lot of like really nuanced work here that's really good, really good stuff.
And near the finish, that like counter from Owen Hart trying to get Bulldog up for the pile driver and then Bulldog counters it into the power slam, that was so good. Like there were a lot of really good spots like that, and I didn't write all of the spots down in the match because I would have had to pause it and it would have taken me forever to watch. And plus I was just enjoying it as it went along. But that one, I don't know, like there was just so much good wrestling and I don't get to see it nearly often enough on Retro Raw. So it was so refreshing because this felt like a match that would be on today's Raw, not Retro Raw.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing as well is that you know, there's little things that like Bulldog, when there was not a lot of people who would kick out of the power slam.
Yeah,
Owen kicked out the power slam here.
Popped for that like really hard, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then Owen puts the sharpshooter in, but Bulldog like uses his power to get to the ropes from the middle of the ring. Like, there's some really cool, because like this is not the era where they would do loads of false finishes on finishers. You know, like so it meant more here. So. Yeah. I think on a watch 20 years later, this still lives up to it for me.
Yeah, still, it's absolutely still held up. And I mean, this is the first time I'm seeing it. I don't have nostalgia for it. I don't have, you know, like I'm fond of Owen and Bulldog, but all I've really seen them do on Retro Raw so far is have dissension and fight each other while sort of having opponents. Like poor Furnace and LaFon, right? But yeah, this absolutely held up. And I, the whole dynamic of it, they keep talking about how they're family and they're also tag team partners. And, you know, the whole thing after the match with, you know, Owen trying to hold up the European Championship belt as well. But then also they're still the tag team champions. So they still kind of have to work together. And I don't really know where this goes. Like, I don't remember how they lose their tag team championships eventually or what happens. So it's intriguing. It's intriguing that they're still working together and that, you know, Owen didn't turn on Bulldog after the match. I kind of like that he didn't, because that makes it more intriguing than if he would have just turned on him.
Exactly. Where's your thumb for this episode?
It's actually in the middle. It's not down.
Wow.
Because I think there was enough good stuff on the show. Like, the ECW recaps I did not appreciate. But I just kind of kept laughing at the dreariness of Berlin and all the crowd shots. Like, there's one at the end of Owen versus Bulldog where there are these ladies wearing stripes and they're just waving their arms around like they're Bailey's Wacky Waving Inflatable Arm Flailing Tube Men or something. Like, what are you even doing? It's not like, I don't know if they're trying to dance or if they're trying to be like, yay, Bulldog or what? Maybe reactions are different in Germany. I don't know. Like, the crowd shots are just amazing throughout this show. So, I mean, some of it was kind of boring, but I'm almost like, I don't know. Like, I kind of enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It wasn't great or anything, but it seemed like kind of a fun look at a house show.
Yeah, it's better than I remember it being. My thumb's going to be up for it because I thought the Bret Hunter match was a nice kind of match that we never really get to see. I liked that Vader gave Rocky Maivia a different kind of match. I really liked Sid and Mankind, and the main event was great. So for me, it was an up. I enjoyed it. There was some. I think the setting and the kind of lack of atmosphere kind of hurt it a little bit, but in terms of what they gave you as a product, it was pretty decent.
Yeah, I found myself enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. So it's almost middling to up, but I'm gonna still go in the middle because some of it was still kind of boring, and there were so many recaps.
So here is what you would have got on Nitro, ladies and gentlemen. Fuck me. So in 1996. Rowdy Roddy Piper agrees to go to WCW. He's been in WWF since like 84, on and off. Vince finds out he's going to WCW. Vince then phones him and asks him to come back at the Survivor Series to induct Snuka into the Hall of Fame. He says he can't because he's going back to WCW. He goes back, has a match with Hogan at Starrcade, has a match with Hogan at Super Brawl. They do really big business in WCW. Piper beats Hogan twice, which never happens. He beats Hogan twice clean. Wow. So the idea for Uncensored, which was the March pay-per-view in WCW of 1997, was to do a three-team cage match. There would be a team NWO, a team WCW, and Sting would have a team. But at this point, Sting was still doing his Rafters thing, where he wasn't back yet, blah, blah, blah. And they decided that they wanted to... actually prolong the Sting thing. So they decided, you know what we should do? We should just give Rowdy Roddy Piper his own team. That'd be a good idea. So, on Nitro, Rowdy Roddy Piper comes out and he says that he needs to assemble a team for Uncensored, and he's got six men back there, and he's gonna ask the fans to vote thumbs up or thumbs down if he could put them on the team. This was the absolute shits. He brings out what essentially are muscled generic men to brawl with them. And it's horrible.
So is he bringing out wrestlers that people know to be on his team? Or are these just like action figures? Are these like Poundland wrestlers?
These are Poundland wrestlers. 100% Poundland wrestlers. He brings out the first guys in a pair of jeans who he just takes down and beats in like 2 seconds.
Rowdy Piper gone. Beats him? Like, is he wrestling all these people?
Yeah, he's wrestling six people. One in a row, like a gauntlet.
Wow.
So, he first of all brings out this guy who's like a bodybuilder, who apparently is from the power plant. Beats him in a matter of seconds. The fans all boo, vote thumbs down. Second guy was an even bigger bodybuilder guy who showed really good potential, and then Piper just sleeper-holded him, knocked him out. Then he followed up with a guy who's like wearing boxing gloves and he looks kind of out of shape, and he just like, they have this really awful, awful boxing match where like Piper keeps doing a timeout and then they kind of hug and then they fight again and they hug and then they fight again. And then the plan is that people
are supposed to... Piper has such a great history with boxing matches at wrestling shows. Let's do that again.
Exactly. So at this point, people are supposed to cheer this guy because this guy's supposed to go through, but everyone starts booing him. So Piper then tells the crowd they're being too harsh on him, and then they box again. Horrible. Then
so they hated it the first time. Let's do it again.
Then they bring out a guy who's supposed to do like martial arts, but he's got a mullet and he's very slow. So he's there, and then they bring out Earthquake. The Earthquake's lost weight and cut his hair. And then at the end, martial arts guy, boxing guy, and Earthquake all are in the team with Roddy Piper. But it's so bad that he has to dump all the teammates and have Ric Flair and Arn Anderson give him Chris Benoit, Jeff Jarrett, and Steve McMichael instead.
Wow. That sounds horrendous.
It is so bad.
Is this why Vince McMahon keeps going on during Owen Hart versus British Bulldog about these not being two guys over 40?
Well, he was doing that because Piper and Hogan headlined Super Brawl.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'm going to find the time code of where it is on the March 3rd, 1997 Nitro. If you fancy just like really like giving yourself like self-harm, like watch it. It is so awful. It's so bad. Like, I read about it and I laughed thinking this is going to be great. It's so awful. It's so bad.
How long does this go?
It goes about 15 minutes.
Wow, that sounds like an incredibly long 15 minutes.
But it's kind of mesmerizing. You can't turn it off.
It's car crash awfulness to its fullest degree.
To the fullest degree. You can also get us on Patreon, folks. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. We're going to have a new interview up later on tonight. We also have the new classic ITR up. We're going to be recording some new $50 podcasts this coming week. So yeah, sign up today if you want to get some more content. And tomorrow, David and I will have our Fastlane review at patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
So Sandra, from Germany, next week, Raw is War.
Not from Germany, from Worcester, Massachusetts.
No, I mean, we're going from Germany.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to Raw is War.
It's true. With bombs and tanks and guns.
Oh,
and
my.
And war things.
Do you know why Raw is War ended?
No.
9/11?
Really?
Yeah, they changed it from
so
Raw is War.
So it went on until then?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it makes sense.
And Stephanie's theme tune at that point was Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. So that changed as well.
Yes. Yep. I can see that too. 9/11 had a great effect. I almost just said great effect. I don't mean great as in like happy great. I mean as in like it had a widespread effect on the world, right? And I'm sure in Vince McMahon's mind.
I really wish that you'd finished that and said 9/11 had a great effect on the world so I could feel like I'm not the worst co-host for saying offensive things. I'm going to try and edit that together so we can get that in one sentence. I won't be able to.
No. But it had a widespread effect on the world, and I'm sure that if you ask Vince McMahon, it had the most effect on the World Wrestling Federation, because of course, the World Wrestling Federation is the most important thing in the entire world, as we have learned tonight.
Of course. Thank you for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoy Fastlane. We hope you enjoy Raw and SmackDown. We'll be back next week with all our usual shows, and we'll see you next weekend for Raw is War.
Oh, joy.
Bye.
Bye.